I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80. Welcome to the Daily Stoic Podcast, where each day we read a passage of ancient wisdom designed to help you in your everyday life. Well, on Thursdays, we not only read the daily meditation, but we answer some questions from listeners and fellow Stoics who are trying to apply this philosophy just as you are. Some of these come from my talks. Some of these come from Zoom sessions that we do with Daily Stoic Life members or as part of the challenges. Some of them are from interactions I have on the street when there happened to be someone there recording. But thank you for listening, and we hope this is of use to you. They are not your rivals. What's the opposite of stoicism, this austere philosophy based on toughness and resilience, virtue and service? Well, in the ancient world, it was Epicureanism. A philosophy said that pleasure was the highest good. Could there be anything more different than Stoicism? Diotimus, whose story is told in Lives of the Stoics, despised the Epicureans. He thought that they were not just soft, he thought they were perverted gluttons. He would have been aghast at the fact that Seneca regularly quoted Epicurus in his letters, even if Seneca stipulated that he was no Epicurean. To tarry in the garden, to avoid pain, this was the antithesis of what the Stoic was supposed to advise or celebrate. As it happens, the Epicureans got a bad rap in the ancient world and in today's. Part of that is because Diotimus spread lies about them, not very Stoic, and part of it is because we just plain miss what they meant when they talked about pleasure, which is why it's worth quoting one of Epicurus's famous letters, which clarifies it all for us. By pleasure, he writes, we mean the absence of pain in the body and of trouble in the soul. It is not an unbroken succession of drinking bouts and of merrymaking, not sexual love, not the enjoyment of the fish and the other delicacies of a luxurious table which produce a pleasant life. It is sober reasoning, searching out the grounds of every choice and avoidance and banishing those beliefs through which the greatest disturbances take possession of the soul. Of all this prudence, he writes, for this reason, prudence is a more precious thing even than the other virtues. For a life of pleasure, which is not also a life of prudence and honor and justice, nor leading a life of prudence and honor and justice, which is not also a life of pleasure. For the virtues have grown one with a pleasant life, and a pleasant life is inseparable from them. So maybe we don't disagree as much as we think we do. Perhaps we are not rivals, but kindred spirits. And instead of scorning the Epicureans, we should try, as Seneca did, to learn from them. There's actually a great book we carry in the Painted Porch called The Art of Happiness. It's a Penguin Classics collection of insights from Epicurus, which I recommend. I'll link to it in today's show episode, but otherwise, enjoy.
From your reading of the Stoic philosophers, why do these thinkers resonate so clearly to modern minds where other ancient thinkers become outmoded? The Stoics are like operating manual for modern leadership.
Well, I certainly agree with the premise that it's an operating manual for modern leadership. I think it's because of all the philosophical schools, the Stoics were real doers. Like even Zeno is... founds Stoicism out of, and I talk about this in my latest book, Lives of the Stoics. It's the first story in the book. Zeno is a successful merchant who loses everything in a shipwreck and he turns to philosophy. So these were people with real experience in the real world. Marcus Aurelius is the emperor. You know, Seneca is Rome's greatest playwright and its most powerful, power broker. The Stoics were diplomats and generals and, you know, businessmen and artists and mothers and fathers. They were real people doing real things in the world. And so I think the philosophy is about practical application as opposed to, you know, coming up with interesting or provocative ideas. So that the pragmatism is why I think it resonates today.
Is it difficult to discourage ego when we see so many examples of it in the media every day and in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, there's sort of a publication bias, if you're familiar with that term, when it comes to ego. As I was saying, most of the great CEOs want to operate under the radar. They don't want to tell you exactly what they're doing and how they're doing it. They don't want to, you know, draw the attention of regulatory agencies or, you know, journalists, or they don't want to be on the cover of magazines. So the people we hear about naturally are the most egotistical, almost by definition, right? The people who want you to hear about them tend to be the most egotistical, and those are the people you hear about the most. So, you know, it's just worth noting that, like, the people you hear about, like, I was thinking about this even during the pandemic. It can feel like I was talking to a friend of mine who's Austin Kleon, who's a great writer. He did Steal Like an Artist. He's like one of the few sane people that I know that's been sort of really safe and smart during the pandemic. And we were talking about all the people we know who've not been safe. And he was like, you got to remember, the people who are not being safe, or the people who are being safe, don't have anything to post on social media about how safe they're being. Whereas the people who are traveling around to events and, you know, going out to dinner every night and, you know, doing what they're not supposed to be doing, are by definition the ones you see, because not only is there something for them to photograph and share, but they don't think there's anything wrong with it, so they're, you know, not ashamed to show it. So it's important to remember that most people are humble. Most people are not egomaniacs. Most people don't want to be the center of attention. I think Susan Cain did this well with her book on introverts. There are half the population is introverted. You just don't see them as much as the extroverts because they're introverted.
Yeah, excellent. This next question, I think you already answered with that, but has social media, with its ability to self-publish and live in an echo chamber, created a dangerous pandemic of ego? Again, I think you just answered that.
Yeah, it feeds the ego. It says, what do you have to say? And then it says, here's what everyone thinks about what you have to say. And, it doesn't, I don't think it engenders humility to say anything of smart thinking.
Yeah. And then another question, how do you suggest coaching employees with these tendencies?
It's hard, right? It's funny. One of the questions I get the most of people go, my boss has a huge ego. What should I do with it? You know, what should I do about it? And I go, you know, you probably have an ego too. Why don't you start there? Right. So I do think, though, as the leader of a company, your job is to model egolessness, and your job is, so first off, you got to lead by example. But second, you're to protect ego. You're to keep ego out of the organization. Bill Belichick famously he's like, if you got an ego, if you're not going to play by the Patriot way, like, get out of here, you know? And he's willing to trade talented people. He's willing to take hits on contracts. His job is to protect the culture. And I think that's your job as a leader, is your job is to protect the culture and to keep ego out.
And how about him denying the medal in Washington? There's
it is
buyer values, huh?
Although that was that got it. That also was such a no-brainer at the same time.
I agree, but right. Yeah. We've seen others that ran and got it in the.
I know. It's nuts.
All right. I think we're kind of just a couple things, I guess. What is the book that you most gift or recommend other than yours, obviously? And you've referenced a few.
I think Robert Greene's books are really good. This is one of my favorite books. I love The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Yeah,
awesome.
Which book. I think for anyone doing anything, Marx Aurelius's Meditations would be a big one. Anti-Fragile is a good one. The Black Swan is a good one. The book I've recommended the most this year is John M. Barry wrote a book called The Great Influenza, which is about the Spanish flu. If you want to figure out what's going to happen next, just study the past. So I thought that was a really great book. I definitely recommend that. And then I've also loved Doris Kearns Goodwin's Leadership in Turbulent Times. I think that's a no-brainer right now.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.